Success stories and interviews with game changers and thought leaders who have overcome both in life and in business. Welcome to Vertical Momentum.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Vertical Momentum. I'm your host, Richard Kaufman, also known as the Comeback Coach. I want to thank you guys for hopping on. I want to thank our fans, our sponsor, Roses of the Hoarding Solution. She helps people that are struggling with hoarding solutions in their homes. And she also has a podcast. Definitely check her out. Guys, this is going to be a great episode. We're going to be talking about some delicate issues, some that I've dealt with in the past. And this young lady that I'm going to have on, she's a writer, author, speaker. She does it all. She's truly amazing. Miss Sandra Rush, how are you today?
Hello, how are you? Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, it's my pleasure, my honor. How are you? How's your day going?
Very busy. Very busy. Very demanding.
Busy is good, right?
Oh, yes. Yes, you've got to keep the conversation going.
So how's everything going in the UK?
Well, pretty much things are easing after COVID. We're slowly coming out of it, which is better for people that have been isolated at home, being able to mix better. It's just uplifting. Part of it is just being happy to just meet friends, family, and just get out. Just get out and enjoy the garden, or just even going shopping. And I hate shopping. I have looked forward to going to the shops every day just to get out and just see people.
Okay, so let's just hop right into this. Once again, I want to thank you for hopping on and hanging out with us. You know, what are your thoughts on COVID-19 and how there have been more arrests for spousal abuse and domestic abuse over the last year than ever before?
It's the thing is, relationships, you're talking about people that are normally at work, they normally have activities to keep them busy. Not everyone can cope being, if you like, shut in, isolated, cut off from a lot of normal activities they would all be doing. But I can see that it would be from the beginning that these would be, the numbers would increase. You know, that nitty little things that you pick out normally become bigger. And what comes to, I don't know, someone would say, oh, don't put your knife and fork down on that worktop, I've just wiped it, and you forget. And that becomes a niggly issue, and then it becomes bigger and bigger. And then before you know it, you're lashing out, you're saying terrible things, you know. And words do hurt. Don't care what anybody says, words do hurt. And before you know it, it can become physical. And I've known it, I've seen it, and not a good thing. It's a terrible thing.
So now, if, you know, because in the United States, a lot of places are still in lockdown. So what are some of the things that we can do if we are in lockdown with our significant other to help reduce any issues like that?
Well, me, I'm one of these that you talk to someone before it becomes physical. Walk away. It's a terrible thing that you have to be in that frame of mind that you need to hit someone. And I'm not just talking about women, I'm talking about men have contacted me and actually had abuse from their spouse. And, you know, they find it hard to handle. And two, it's they're not used to being in this confined relationship, if you like. And to be honest, walk away.
Okay. Now, tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your background, and about how you got involved with helping people that are struggling.
I started out in journalism, 1997. So that's dating myself a little bit, but that's how I started. I wanted to see if I could be a more adventurous writer, if you like, and I got into trying to write books. I thought, I've got to try. I've got to know if I've got some sort of creativeness in me. And I started with those, and it slowly progressed from there. But how I got into this one is I was doing a writer's, I was invited to do a writer's talk. This lovely, lovely lady came up to me and she said, "I've got a story for you. Would you be willing to listen?" So that's what I did. And she says, "Would you talk to my husband?" And what it is the couple themselves have both got this amazing story of how they met, and from two totally different backgrounds that you wouldn't put the two of them together. And they come through this horrific journey in two different ways. You've got the lady that's trying to escape from an abusive relationship and hiding a past. You're talking terrible, terrible things. And you've also got a young man that went to Afghanistan and at 18 thought he was going to change the world. And 2 weeks in Afghanistan, I think it dawned on him that this was not, you know, what he thought it would be. And it becomes a battle of she's afraid of a previous relationship to enter into another one. And a lot of it covers domestic abuse, of how she became this person, and fear when someone inflicts these terrible things onto you. It becomes a fact of hide and seek. You don't want people to see them. You wear clothing that covers the bruises. You lie for them. You lie because you don't want them to think, one, you're embarrassed about it, or two, it's you're afraid.
Now, did you ever personally deal with anything like this?
What, in my relationships?
Yep, or anybody close, like family?
Oh, yes, yes. Personally, I was married to an ex-serviceman, so I know what it's like being married to the forces. You're not just married to them, you're married to the forces as well. You became that person's service number plus one. I was lucky in that sense that the relationship, I was a braver person. I walked away. Members of my family did not come through it as well, but we all deal with domestic abuse in different ways. And some people would probably say, well, to say walk away, but how do you know when to walk away? But how do you know staying is the right thing as well? I mean, I personally wouldn't want somebody abusing me that much that I think, hang on a minute, this is not a normal life. And what you think is being normal is someone physically abusing you or mentally abusing you. Is that too? And that's what, is that normal? Is that really normal? I mean, like I say, I've had so many people contacting me with various stories in their lives. It's really lovely, lovely man. hiding his bruises from his wife, you know, from his family, because his wife was abusing him. And he said, I've just become so afraid of telling anybody, more embarrassed that this big butch man was afraid of this little lady. Do you know what I mean? And it's hard to judge. And it's like, once they start landing out, when do they stop?
And, you know, like you said, there's so many different forms of abuse. You know, there's physical, there's sexual, there's verbal abuse.
Yeah. Mental abuse, I've found, is the hardest to deal with. Some people, she's still going through it. It's like, you're lying. Everything is lies. You're judging them. You know, it's hard to physically say she wasn't marked, but mentally she's scarred for life.
Now, and you know, because I grew up in a very abusive household, physically and mentally, and sometimes, like, I believe that you can either speak life into your children or you can speak death into your children. So, well, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, my upbringing was a little bit of a... It wasn't abusive, but it was strict. And in that sense, my dad, he was the salt of the earth. He was amazing. He was always there for us. Now, we would lie, cheat, and steal from our dad. Oh, just us three girls, and we would lie, cheat, and steal from my dad. We would do all sorts of things, get up to all sorts of things. So our relationship with my father is very, very strong. But my mother, she was, she wasn't always a nice person. But to everybody else, she was a saint.
And you know what? I think a lot of it is, like you said, people don't know what goes on behind closed doors.
No, they don't.
And, you know, and like in the States, I don't know about the UK, it's very frowned upon for a man to put his hand on a woman.
Oh, yes.
But if a woman slaps a man, it's okay.
No, it's not okay. It's not okay, is it?
No, but
I mean, I don't know about you, but I was brought up that a man doesn't hit a woman. That's what it was. But you very rarely heard of a woman hitting a man. And sadly, that is increasing. I mean, I've got, I don't know, in the last few weeks, I think I've had about 12 men actually contact me and say in some way or another they was abused by a female. And it's wrong. There is no discrimination on sex of hitting someone or marking them and mentally abusing them, physically abusing them, sexually abusing them. It's wrong, periodly. It's not acceptable, is it?
In my eyes, no.
No, it's not.
Not at all. Now, I've seen a big rise in, because I talked to a lot of medical and psychological professionals, that they're seeing a rise in cases with same-sex marriages starting to have a lot of abuse issues also, and nobody really talks about that whatsoever.
Yeah.
Is that the same thing in the UK?
To be honest, I haven't come across many that have had those sort of issues, but I do know of same-sex relationships, and they're not all working. They are judged still on being men, women, whatever, and I find, talking to them, that... I think there's about four couples that I know of that have had issues, and they've been I haven't heard anything since then, but like I say, but so I haven't had that experience with as many same-sex relationships as I have with couples. I don't know why that is, but like I say, I'm on various abuse sites and things like that. People contact me and they talk about relationships and things like that. But say, before I know, they have resolved their issues, so I can't really confirm.
Now, I was in the military for over 20 years. A lot of my friends were in the military. A lot of my friends are police officers, firefighters. Yes. Why do you think that firefighters and police officers and veterans struggle with post-traumatic stress?
They're front line. It's simple as that. They're front line. They see more, let's just say they see more than what other people would see. One of my guys, veterans I've worked with, he see his friend blown into 12 pieces and he's haunted every day as he counts them 12 pieces in his mind every day. So it is hard. I mean, a lot of people, I know veterans that have sort of like come out of the forces and they've gone into security, things like that. And sadly, they still are susceptible to mental health issues. They are vulnerable in the jobs they do to be not able to cut off at the end of the shift or day or whatever and say, today's been a good day. I mean, I haven't met anybody that said, today's been a good day. No one's died. Do you know what I mean? So it is hard when you're on the front line jobs and things like that, that you do face these things. I mean, firemen, how many firemen? I don't know anybody. I've never met a fireman that actually rescued a kitten out of a tree. So, it's always been horrific stories that they've told me. Veterans, the book based on Afghanistan, the horrors of war, the police, look at the riots and things that they have to deal with. And also with how they're judged in the job they do.
I totally agree. Now, you've been very involved in the veteran community, correct?
Oh, yes. My dad was military. My uncle was military. I think most of my family at some point have been military. My sister's married military. So at some point in time, since I was specking in the universe, our families have been involved in the military. My grandfather, First World War, people I know, Second World War. So it's always been a military family, if you like, military background.
So tell us about the book Blast from the Past.
Well, it what, in the veteran side or just the storyline?
Just the storyline. And
the storyline is literally about a young guy that goes to 18, goes to Afghanistan, and about him and his friends. He meets the woman that actually eventually becomes his wife, and how he comes across and what he sees, especially when dealing with nightmares. A lot of veterans I interviewed for the book suffered with alcohol abuse, mental abuse. There is so many different visions of how the book takes you and what you see from a different perspective of somebody else's condition of PTSD. And what starts as something so small, like, I'll just nip to the bar with
a couple of drinks, stay a little bit longer before
you know it. We've got someone that can't function through the day without a bottle of vodka inside of him. So it's a reality check of how it certainly opened my eyes when I decided to write the book, because I interviewed 33 people for the book. And out of that, since that time, 5 have committed suicide. They couldn't take the pain any longer through mental health and PTSD. So unfortunately, 5 have since taken their own lives. I am so, so grateful I have met these people for different reasons, totally different reasons. What started out in an interview with the lady whose story it is, and her husband, I actually went on to interview his friends and friends of friends, and also a couple of American veterans gave me their versions of events of what they would like to say. And at the end of the book, I actually listed a few of the quotes from the guys, and doesn't matter whatever to them, it was all about serving their country. And it makes you so proud to know these people. And I know a lot of them, how I got into working with PTSD veterans, that side of it, is because I feel I would like to give them something. And as I know America has a great deal of respect for their veterans, but sometimes in the UK, it's not always the case. And we've dealt with a lot of homeless veterans at various sites that I'm linked in with to get them jobs, get them advice, benefits, housing. It's all there. And basically, sometimes it's just they want someone to talk to. And that really is how it all started. I mean, it didn't just happen overnight. This book was 4 years in the making. I mean, I just didn't walk up to a veteran and said, please tell me your story. It took a lot of coaxing. It took a lot of trust, not just on their side, but my side as well, because, you know, they got to know me. I would love to adopt all of them. I don't think my house is big enough, but they are such an amazing group of people. And the two American veterans that I'm still in touch with, they're wonderful guys. I chat to them, I speak to their families. They are just amazing, and they have been through so much. And to me, they deserve the support. They've given so much for their country. Why can't we give a little bit back? Let them know we care. Let them know we can support them, and just, even if it's like a Zoom meeting of 2 minutes and over a cup of tea or coffee or whatever, and just say, how are you? Give them a smile, because that smile means a lot.
I agree. Now, why do you think, you know, I've had a couple of doctors come on here the last couple of weeks, and they all have differing opinions. Why do you think that there are some people that can go to war and come home pretty much unscathed, but then there could be somebody that's with them, went through the same thing, and they have a totally different reaction?
Well, I know someone that's in the British Paras. Tough bunch of guys, yeah? Or women, if you like. And he has a really good way of just switching off. Just go into that area, do what you've got to do and come out, and he'll come home to his parents or whatever and just have it go, yeah, it's all right. And just, that's it. I think he just sees it as it's his job. That's it. He has a perfectly good cut off at, like, yeah, okay, I'm just going to work today, whatever I see. And he's seen some pretty horrific things, I'm not saying that. But some people have a better detachment from it.
one of the guys that I'm in contact with, he's the opposite. Now, you're talking about when we had troubles in Ireland, yeah? There's a lot of various bits and pieces going on. Now, this other guy, he come across so hard, so macho, and yet someone set off a firework and he was a quivering wreck. He was hiding under a table, crying, because suddenly it just hit him that this was not, it was an explosion, and it was the explosion of the firework that triggered it. And he lost his job, he lost his career. But it came out at that one point.
So if somebody is struggling with, because I know that there's a lot of people that struggle with it that are still in the armed forces, and they're afraid to get help because they're afraid of losing their job,
yes,
or their position.
So yes.
What can
me, a person do? I tell them to talk to someone, but talk to someone you can trust. Find that person. We all have one, that one person that we trust with our lives. And more so, veterans have that unique bond. You know this, you're a veteran yourself. But we have this unique bond that we're family. And as such, we look after each other. No one is programmed to just mechanically not be affected. We're humans. We're affected by many things. But when they try to continue, to me, it only makes matters worse.
All right, now I have a question. I grew up in, like I said, I grew up in an abusive household. A lot of anger, a lot of cursing, and a lot of, putting the kids down.
But
as I get older and I'm a parent myself, I catch myself repeating some of the same behaviors and I'm changing.
Yes.
How does a person start to change their behavior as far as their relationships go with their wife and their children?
Well, I always said I wasn't going to be like my mother. And I hope that I'm not. I'm very close with my son. He's my world. He's my world. And his family, they're very close too, but my parent, my mother, was a totally different person, and I grew up saying, I'm not going to be like that. I'm never treating my kids like that, never. And thankfully, you find yourself thinking, well, I'm not. I'm my own person. You are your own person. You have the ability to have that cut-off point that you think, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to be like that.
And unfortunately, I don't know whether it's nurture or nature. I was just talking to a gentleman about this earlier. Usually, like if there's an alcoholic father in the household, a child will go either way. He'll either go, I don't drink because my father drank.
Yeah.
Or he'll go the other way and say, well, I'm going to drink because my father drank.
Mm.
So is that nature or is that nurture?
I wouldn't call it nature, would you? Like I say, you are your own person. You can't just go by, my dad liked to drink. I'm not saying he didn't. We'd meet him at the pub and things like that. And, he'd have quite a bit at some point. But I don't drink. I mean, I'm quite happy with a glass of milk. So, but my, I think it depends on the person. It does depend on the person. I'm not a big drinker, never have been. My dad was one of these that you are letting the side down because you don't drink. Often he would say, oh, you're like your mother. So I don't think it is nature to actually say, you know, we don't grow up thinking I'm going to be an alcoholic by the time I'm 20. We don't grow up thinking, oh, you know, that kid looks sweet. You know, they're going to be a wife beater or husband beater or a mental abuser, rapist, whatever you want to call it. But it's not born into us. We become this person. We become our own person of, you know, destruction, if you like. And it's, we're not always good with it to say, okay, I'm not going to be like my dad. I'm not going to be like my mum. You know, you have to live your own life. You have to forge your own path. And you can't do that in someone else's shadow, can you?
No, but now, what can some people do if they recognize, okay, I have a problem, I have anger issues, and I don't want to be like that anymore?
Yeah, how many do you know that have actually accepted that they've got these problems? Because people that have contacted me have, you know, gone past that stage of saying, I think I've got a problem. What do you think? You know, so they're a little bit more inclined to think, I've been doing this a long time. And it's, you know, they leave it to someone else to make that judgmental sort of analysis of saying, for God's sake, mate, you need help. You know, and like I say, this guy that was going to work every day and he needed a bottle of vodka inside it to just get through the day. I had a guy that went to prison for beating someone to a pulp because he had anger issues. It was only when he came out of prison that he actually sought help. So it's the realization of saying, when do I stop? You have to have that stop and saying, look what I'm doing to myself, look what I'm doing to my family. How could I, you know, people, when they're abusive, one of the things I heard one lady say was, I did that because I love you. Now, if I didn't hit you, you wouldn't know what you've done wrong. Now, why is that? Why does someone have to lash out to say, it's not love, is it? It's not. It can't be. I don't find hitting someone to get their attention to say, oh, he's only doing this because he loves me. Like, not a chance.
So now you said you interviewed 33 people for the book, right?
Yes, I did.
And 5 committed suicide.
Yes, they have.
So what did the other 28 do differently that the 5 didn't do?
We talk every day. We talk every day. One of the quotes in the book was, the guy did say to me, the best thing I did was talk to you. They remained closed for such a long time. They found their voice, whereas the other 5 had gone so deep within themselves and they'd lost so much, even the will to live and the pain they were suffering just was too much. It was just, and I don't think if you get someone that's determined to physically harm themselves to that extent to escape the pain, something really has to be done. Because, you know, these people, they have the whole life, or would have had the whole lives in front of them. A parent, to me, should not outlive their children. So when you get a 20-odd year old person, you know, that would rather commit suicide just to get away from the pain, we need to do something to support them. And I don't think there's enough help to be, you know, to guide these people and get them to the stage where it's, what are you doing? You know,
I spent hours on the phone to a guy that was like,
why am I here? Why am I living? Excuse me. And we sat and talked for hours. And, you know, one day it was 4 hours. And, yeah, I didn't get any writing done. But he said, I said, how do you feel? And he says, I feel a little bit better. And to me, that's the important thing. He was alive. You know, and when you get someone thinking, I'm going to go away and hide and take my own life, it's just not right that they should die alone, and the person that finds them grieves as well.
Now, you're involved with a lot of, I don't like to say charity, but you're involved with a lot of organizations that help veterans struggling with PTSD and stuff. What are some of the things that they're doing to actually help the veterans? Because sometimes just talking isn't enough. Sometimes it's great to, you know, get out, go fish, you know.
Yeah. Lots of help groups. There's psychiatrists, there's doctors. Like you say, you've spoken to some of them yourself. And there is courses. It's rebuilding your life. I did question someone once, and I said, your issue is, he said, when I came out as a veteran, when I came out of the forces, no one was there to show me, when I took the uniform off, how to stop being a soldier. And a lot of the help groups and charities that I'm involved with, they do all this transition, helping you get the support, retrain you, get housing, get funding. Like I say, there's doctors, there's these sort of like shelters that they can actually, when serious cases, can go to. And excuse me, and stay in, slowly become not a better person, but more equipped to deal with what's wrong with them and how advanced their condition is. PTSD has many, many faces. It's a terrible thing. Mental health is a terrible thing, full stop. But I bonded with these veterans. Some of the stories they told me was horrific. And as I say, I've never met the two veterans that I worked with on the book from America, but some of their stories it's heartbreaking. And to lose a friend, you know, shot at the side of you when you've gone through so much, it must be, I could only imagine what they must be going through, because I haven't been in that situation, and praise God, never am. But all these people that have come through so much trauma to actually decide what sort of effects that it has on them. I mean, you're talking sleep deprivation is a terrible thing. Can't cope with, you know, they're awake near enough 24 hours a day, there's no sleep. Alcohol is a people, I'm not targeting alcohol alone, but there's so many different things. I mean, one guy said to me when he was trying to get back, he said, if I can sniff it, inject it, or swallow it, I would take it to get me through the day. Now, that's pretty severe. But it was better than reality.
Okay, now, well, I just forgot what I was going to ask because I was so into your conversation.
That's a woman getting in, letting you get a word in, you see. That's what it is.
You know, now, we're living in a crazy world, but I think that, you know, like in the United States, the number is on average 37 first responders every day.
Right.
Commit suicide every single day in the States. So what are some of the things that we can do as, you know, a family member, a husband, a wife, a cousin, that we can do to help bring that number down?
Well, for a start, it's what is their symptoms, what is their condition, what is their general health. Like I say, I have a lot of veterans that we have like a chain link, if you like, that we will call each other every day. And that is really important to let them know you care. Just the support of saying, are you okay? Doesn't matter what the answer is, you can talk about things. But when someone needs help, it's you need to get them help. And whether it's making that call for them or taking it to the next level of saying, look, this is your life. We want you around a lot longer. You know, please get help. And some of them don't even realize they've got a problem. And domestic abuse very rarely accept that they have a problem of hitting their spouse. So, you know, you don't always see for yourself that you have a problem, whether it's a chocoholic, if you like, or whether it's sleep deprivation or alcohol or smoking or whatever. Doesn't matter. It's just the fact that if you have a problem, it's always someone that's closest to you that will spot it first. And sometimes that person feels better for talking to a total stranger than a family member. I don't know whether it's because they feel let down or they feel their family wouldn't understand. Or the fact is, it's like they just feel challenged with the fact that they can't deal with it. And it's not about that. If someone needs help, we help them.
So, okay, talking about that now, how do we find you? How do we get in touch with you if somebody wants
you? You can get me through my website, smrush2020.com. You can do that. Or I have a Facebook account, so just Sandra Rush, and you'll probably find me. Most of it is online. There's LinkedIn, there's various social media. People can chat, they can just say hello. If they're feeling down, just say hello. It doesn't take more than that. It's nice to share with someone that thinks someone actually cares.
Yep. Now, the last question I ask, you know, we live in a crazy world right now. We're still in COVID. We have grandparents that are actually homeschooling kids.
Yes.
We got parents that are working two jobs just trying to put the, you know, food in the kids' mouths.
Yeah.
So if I ask the average person to do something in 7 days, they're never likely to get to it. But if I ask somebody to take a step in the next 24 hours, they're more likely to do it.
Yeah.
So if somebody is struggling with either domestic abuse issues or mental health issues, what can they do in the next 24 hours to get help?
One, I would phone, you normally have, I don't know about the States, but here we have helplines. If you, at the back of my book, I know, you know, it's different. There's a list of information. I've got a list of useful sites. There's obviously the charities I'm involved in. There's Combat Stress, Care After Combat, Help for Heroes, Forgotten Veterans, Mind at War, SAFA's line. You have a SAFA? You have a SAFA charity?
Okay.
So there's Mind. That's mental health. Because it's in the States, I'm not too sure. I'm by two guys that I interviewed for the book. They have, on various occasions, had to call a friend to say, please stop me. I've took pills and I've took alcohol. And they've had to have the stomachs pumped, but they had enough sense about them to call a person and say, I've done something stupid. I've took pills and I've drank alcohol. Please help me. And it's that will to live that somebody's like, okay. So, I mean, that's a drastic occurrence, but to me, it's just help your neighbour. You know, we've got homeless veterans here. If, like, one of them, one of the guys that I work with, bless him, he took a photograph. There was a homeless veteran living on a roundabout here in the UK, and he was living in a tent on a roundabout. Main roads, so it was pretty horrific, and no phone, nothing, and this veteran that I'd worked with through various pieces in the book, and he said, what can we do? And I rang another friend that was also a veteran. He went and drove 2 hours to pick him up, took him home, cleaned him up, gave him a job. He's slowly, I mean, I'm not saying he's perfect every day, but slowly he's coming back. He's getting his life back on track. He's becoming, how can you say, can't say a better person, but a person he used to be. And he's forever. So there is lots of people out there just willing to help. You just have to reach out. There's always someone there. You're never alone. You're not in the forces on your own. You serve with people. You serve with friends. You have a constant family around you. You are never, ever alone. All you have to do is reach out and someone will help.
I love that. So, guys, I want to, you know, reach out to Sandra if you're struggling. Pick up her book. You know, check everything out that she's got going on. I want to thank our sponsor, Tammy Moses of The Hoarding Solution. She's also a podcaster. And Sandra, I'm going to try to get you in touch with her so you can go on her show so you can talk together. Thank you so much for coming on. This is going to go out in a couple of weeks, and I'll let you know when it's out everywhere, okay?
Yes, thank you, Richard. Thank you for inviting me. It's lovely.
Oh, it's been fun. Have a blessed day.
Yes, you too. Take all care. Right. Bye.
Thank you for joining us today. Please hit subscribe and share. Please feel free to leave us a comment.